Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. Spring there, spring came on suddenly, as spring always does. It just took one thunderstorm and green spears, tulips poking up in the flower beds, and all the winter clothes went away into boxes down in the basement, and suddenly you feel exposed in your body, open to the air and to the sun, which makes us a little bit nervous. Birds flying in that we have not seen for months, and frogs, we hear them now when the sun goes down, and the wild turkeys coming into town, odd, awkward creatures lurking around the backs of garages. You walk into your yard and they're there lurking around. It has something to do with mating. It must. They look so strange and so silly, and they're such a bother. People usually are when they're in their courtship period. Think back on your own. People almost never look good when they're mating. They're single-minded. They're single-minded, and there's always lurking involved. The storm windows came off suddenly, and people washed out the corpses of flies and spiders in the windowsills, and the screens were put up, and now the smells drift into the house, and the smells drift out, and you can smell what your neighbors are eating for supper. You can smell spaghetti, and you can smell fish frying in some kind of a cornmeal, breaded fish, and you can smell liver and onions, which maybe you would rather not smell. It was the week of the prom. It came early in Lake Wobegon this year. It was the spring prom, and in this house, in this white house with yellow trim, why did they paint it that way? Nobody knows. Two figures are peering out a side window at this beautiful young woman stepping out onto the front steps. This beautiful young woman whom they knew as a child. They've been her neighbors her entire life. Emily, gorgeous girl, stepping out to wait for some lovesick boy to come take her to the prom, waiting there on a beautiful spring evening. It's Clarence and Arlene Bunsen. They're peering out through the curtains, remembering this girl. When she was a little kid, she used to come knock at their door. She would come. She would sit with them. They'd give her Coke. They'd give her tea. Sometimes she'd come in and read a book. Sometimes she'd sit at their piano. She'd play Fur Elise. She would sit with their cat on her lap, this lovely child. And then around the age of 10 or 11, she stopped coming. And they haven't seen much of her ever since. They look out through the curtains at her, this child whom they adore. She has no idea how many people are watching her as she steps out onto the front steps, wearing this white gown, which is kind of shocking, kind of revealing in a way that reminds you of Zsa Zsa Gabor. But there she is, with some kind of tattoo on her shoulder. Henna, one hopes, but you can't be sure. And now here's a boy. He's just walked from his car across the grass up there. This boy in a white tuxedo who looks as if he's in pain. He keeps shifting from one foot to another. He just doesn't know where to stand and where to put his hands. He keeps plucking at his face and touching at his hair, and they stand there uncomfortably on the front step for a while. What's happening? Then they hear a knock at their back door, and they go to the back door, and it's Emily's mother. She's laughing. She says, "Do you have any flowers?" The boy, Brad, forgot the corsage. "Do you have anything?" "Well, tulips really wouldn't work well. But maybe this lily." They snip off a lily from their Easter lily plant. It still looks nice. And if you kind of press it flat, it'll work all right. So she takes it around to her back door and then out to their front door. And they see her get in the car and drive away. This little girl that they used to know, they'd give anything if she would stop in and talk with them just one more time. But they understand. April in Paris was the theme of the prom, but nobody told the farmers who were out northwest of town that it was the April in Paris, and so they were out spreading manure for 3 days. Spreading fresh manure, and the prevailing winds carried it into town, so it wasn't very Parisian, unless you've been in the wrong parts of Paris. And the boys tried to make a joke of it, but it wasn't funny to the girls. Some of the girls wept. This was the culmination of their high school life. This was to be the epitome of elegance. And the smell that wafted through, teachers walked through spraying air freshener. But something synthetic and sweet couldn't compete with the smell of the fecal matter of cows and pigs. It was a disaster for those girls. They came home ruined. Oh, poor things, if that's the worst thing you ever have to suffer. I hope so. God bless you. Irene Bunsen brought home a whole truckload, bushel baskets of manure. She drives 20 miles south to get horse manure from an Appaloosa farm. Beautiful brown horses. She collects, shovels their manure, and she spreads it on her long garden. She spades it in where her tomatoes will grow. The tomato lady on her hands and knees on a spring afternoon, forking the manure into the dirt. Feels so good after a long winter, shut up in overheated rooms, listening to people give you the benefit of their opinion about this and about that, to have an end of talk, and to get out and to kneel on the grass and kneel down in the dirt and put your hands down into it. We're tired of talk, tired of opinions. Sit at dinner and people are talking and talking, and you recognize what they're saying and you think to yourself, I read the New York Times this morning. I don't need to hear the audio version back this afternoon. We're tired of people, tired of people because we're tired of ourselves, and our friends are so much like us. They agree with us on so many things, and we're sick of it, just sick of it. And now spring comes, and you can open up the dirt, and something primeval and visceral starts to stir in you, which is beyond politics, beyond all of this, which has more to do with this child, Emily, who has a summer job in Oregon at a sports resort. And she's the sort of kid who could go out there and never come back. That's the tragedy of raising kids. You raise them to be independent and strong and self-reliant, and then if they are, you never see them again. You see the ones who are troubled. Those are the ones you get to know. Your successes go away. You never see them again. She may very well, because she's descended from strong stock, even if she doesn't know it. Her great-great-grandmother, Sina, came to Minneapolis from Norway. She left her home in the little village of Melbu, and she came to Minneapolis because she had relatives there. But then when she got there, she couldn't find them. Lost their address or something. Nobody. She didn't care. She studied English. And in a remarkable short time, she was put to teaching English. There was a quick turnaround back then. She was sent out to teach, and she had an offer to go out and teach in North Dakota, out near Jamestown. Well, when you've left Norway, you've come all the way across the Atlantic on a one-way ticket. What's a few hundred more miles? So she went. She wasn't looking for anything. She already had her life all figured out. She was in love with Olaf Olafsson back in Melbu, who could not come with her because his mother was sick. And if he had left, it would have killed her. So he had to wait for her to die so he could come. This was all understood. It didn't have to be discussed. And the last night before she left Melbourne, she went to his house, and they went upstairs to the bedroom under the roof, and they took off their clothes, and they got into bed together, and they lay there side by side so they would have something to remember each other by for however long they would have to wait. And then she came away, not knowing how many years it would be, but she kept him in her heart. She went out to North Dakota, and she had a job teaching in a one-room schoolhouse 20 miles from town, way out there in the rolling prairie. She put up with a family, she boarded with a family, but she didn't care for them. And when she heard about a homestead that someone had settled and then abandoned, she decided she would homestead herself. She went out and she lived in a 10 by 12 foot cabin with a bed and a chair and a small stove, and she walked 2 miles to teach school until she could afford to buy a horse and a buggy. She was there to homestead, so she'd have to stay for 5 years before she could prove up on the land and take the title to it. Books were so precious to her over that winter that she was all alone. She read some in Norwegian, and she read Tolstoy. She read War and Peace. So the English that she learned from it had to do with passion and warfare. Then she read Anna Karenina and learned a whole other set of language. In the spring, a neighbor came, and he plowed 15 acres of prairie that had never been plowed before. And she took off her shoes, and she walked barefoot through this fresh earth that had not seen the sun for as long as she could imagine. And she wrote him a letter back in Melbourne. She said, "This is the first letter I have written in English, and I send it to you. Today I walked without shoes across the fresh earth, and it was so wonderful. I thought of you and of our life together. You are the music of my heart." She spent 4 years there, and it took 4 years for his mother to die. And Olaf Olafsson came over. She sold the land, and that was the nest egg for the rest of their life. Those are the people this girl is descended from. These are people of faithfulness, people who are able to cling to a vision that was clear in their minds and be true to it for long periods of time. The smell of manure in the air is the smell of faith. We go through this misery, this hardship, we endure together in faith that it will soon come to us. And if not the next time, we will keep pressing forward until we find it. Those are the people we come from. Those are the people we are. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.